This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, it's a whole new world out there.
You know, I'm afraid to ask you how are you because that's kind of a loaded question these days, especially
that's
after
right.
This past week.
It's this new deal where, you know, we haven't been out of the house in a while.
I know it. We have not been out of the house, and the more we stay in the house and watch TV and see what's happening in the outside world, it's like it kind of makes you just want to stay in the house.
Well, and of course, you know, I have been working hard every day. I'm buying policies. I'm trying to get money in on maturities for clients and doing all this. But I'm doing it at the house.
Well,
I'm not over at the office doing it.
And you said that you finally got up and did your hair and makeup and everything today, didn't you?
I did. Now, I didn't do a good job on some things, but now the makeup and all that, I've got that down. I'm okay on that. The big problem is I thought I was so smart, I bought all this stuff for the nails.
Mm.
It never even dried.
Really?
I did something wrong. It did not dry.
So you're...
I don't know what happened. So I had to take it off.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So, here I am thinking I'm the smartest person in the world, and I can't even do that.
Well, you know, I'd like to give you some advice to dry your nails, but really I got nothing, so I can't
help you. Don't know anything about that, I swear. You're supposed to know a little bit about everything.
I Google it real quick and tell you what I find. But
I don't know what went wrong. I don't know if I bought the wrong thing. I don't know what happened. But it just sat there on my nails, just, you know.
Wow.
Kind of squishy. And I thought, well, boy, this isn't going to get it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that nail polish is supposed to be squishy.
But it was the stuff that goes under the nail polish.
Huh. Well, I don't know how
but
it
didn't work.
It didn't work?
Didn't work. I did something wrong. I see it down at the nail salon all the time.
Hmm. Do they have wet, squishy nails at the nail salon?
No. I mean, they put it on and it dries instantly.
So
I don't know what I did wrong.
Is it those little special lights? Do you have to, like, when you go there, do you put your fingers under the heat lamp or whatever that is?
I know I used to, and the things I use now, you don't do that, but I'll bet this stuff had to have had the heat lamp.
Mm.
I bet it had to have that little light on it in order to dry.
Oh, so you got the special high industrial grade nail polish then?
Oh, yes. I mean, industrial strength.
I don't know why I thought otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to get the strongest that you can get.
Yeah, yeah. So you didn't just go to the store and just kind of pick out whatever you found on the shelf. You went for the industrial.
I ordered it.
Oh.
Yeah, I ordered it from the supply house. The whole deal. You know, I ordered one of these, one of those, one of those. I said, oh, there's nothing to it. I can do this. And I kept waiting for it to dry, and it just didn't dry. I go, well, I can't go to the next step. I've got to take this off.
How long did you wait for it to dry before you finally gave up?
Oh, about 20 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah, I just kept waiting and waiting. And said, this stuff, maybe it's just, you know, slow, and I'll just give it time, but it did not dry.
Yeah. Well, I would say
it
after
was
20
still
minutes.
Squishy right on my fingers.
Well, you're lucky that it didn't roll off and roll onto the couch or your clothes or any of that. Goodness gracious. Sounds
like
a mess.
I was very careful with it. I had a towel down and everything. I knew not to get this stuff on me. I mean, that part I had down.
Wow.
It was how to do it I didn't have down.
Well, then,
and,
They probably should have sent you like one of those special lights, or if you needed special equipment to make it dry, they should have thrown that in there.
They should have. It would have been nice if they'd sent me a little message and say, lady, you don't have everything you need.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot do this because you don't have everything. No, they did not do that. They just sent that out, and, you know. But the best one was, I was ordering from Target the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered hair rollers that get hot, you know, those kind. And they're very futuristic looking anyway. And I wanted some scissors to cut the children's hair. They sent me eggs instead. I just can't figure that one out. And why do you get eggs instead of scissors? Maybe they figured I was going to ruin their hair. But don't let her have the scissors.
It might have been a blessing in disguise.
It probably was. You know, these little kids would never look the same.
Yeah, yeah. And they're trying to subtly tell you that instead of cutting the children's hair, you need to just make them omelets and just move on.
That's it. Just move on. Let them have long hair till we get over this. You know, and if it's not your specialty, just leave it alone.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I've seen a lot of people, apparently they're putting the thing on the top of, they're putting their hair in that thing on top of their head. It's like the new trend. It's all the rage.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh. So you could do that for the girls, and I suppose before too much longer, it'll be acceptable to do it for the grandchildren, boys, too.
It's liable to be if we don't get them a haircut.
I know it. We're all going to be like cavemen.
That's right. I mean, you know, you don't want your hair down over your ears for boys.
No. That's why you have to put it in the thing on top of your head.
I see. Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do. I mean, you know, everybody does have long hair, including me. My hair is probably longer than it's ever been.
I know it. I know it. You probably have never had hair this long, have you?
No. I am praying for beauty shops and nail salons to open. That's my prayer. We've got to get them open.
Well, that's in the works, isn't it? I think...
They tell me it is, but they tell me there's all kinds of things they have to do before they can open. They've got to make sure everything's 6 foot apart, all kinds of things. And I saw one beauty shop said, it'll take us a few days to do this. We do not have everything set up to do it the way they're going to require.
Oh, yeah. They probably have to reorganize the whole shop to you know, fit within the guidelines, I would guess.
And apparently, retail stores, I don't think they're going to let them open with people coming in. I think you can go and pick up things. I know the Galleria, you know, that's a big place in Dallas. On Friday, they're going to have a deal where you can come pick up things at the store.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And they said Neiman's might file for bankruptcy this week.
You know, I heard rumors about Neiman, and you're the first person I thought of. We were talking about that, and we're like, uh-oh, what's Faye going to do? Because
it'll ruin my whole day.
I know it.
It'll ruin my whole day.
It's like your favorite place in the whole world.
It is. It is my favorite place in the whole world. And I don't know if they file for bankruptcy, would they stay open during that or just close down?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a restructuring. Maybe they're redoing. You know, and then you start thinking, well, my goodness, you've got all these malls that are already, you know, halfway or three quarters way abandoned. And so they're already having to figure out new ways of doing things and what to do with that retail space and all that that land and all those properties. And how are people going to do business? Because people aren't going to the malls anymore. They're going to a lot of online shopping. And maybe this is just the thing that pushes everything over the head, over the edge, where everybody goes strictly online. I don't know.
Well, and they may have to. I mean, can you imagine? I know that during this crisis, you know, everything I've done has been online. I just order everything because I don't want to go out and get exposed to anything.
Yeah.
And, of course, now they're saying, you know, you may have to wear a mask if you go to the grocery store or the pharmacy. And I have masks, by the way.
Do you really?
Claudia, my secretary out there, has a cousin who's a seamstress, and she made them for me.
Really? How nice.
Yeah. I have five. And, of course, the little children tried them. I'm saying, well, these don't fit. No. I said they were for adults.
Well, you know, we were driving down the street the other day, and there was a line of people trying to get into Joann Fabric. And so we drove by, and we're like, what is all this big line of people getting into the fabric store? And then we kind of figured out that, yeah, they're buying fabric to make their own masks, because you can't buy any online. There's none available.
So that's what it is. And I know there was a lady here in Richardson, Texas, that was making masks, and she said anybody that would like to join her and make some, you know, she would give them the fabric and everything. Mm. So, you know, a lot of people are making their own, and figure that we're going to need them for some time.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably going to be one of those things where, you know, you have enough, you have like 3 or 4 or 5 masks, you know, kind of like you switch them out with your shirt. You accessorize them with your outfit. Masks may be the new norm.
They're like the new hats.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I hope this is like a 30-day deal.
Yeah. I have a feeling it probably won't.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Good luck with that.
I know. I mean, I am an optimist. I'm not a pessimist. An optimist, you know. I believe that this is going to be short-lived. We're going to get through it. All the businesses are going to open. Oil's going to come back.
Ooh.
It needs to make a big comeback, and everybody's going to be all right.
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole nother thing of issues is oil. And my goodness, what did it close earlier this week? It was negative $37, I think.
Negative 37. It's come back now.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. But it's still not where it needs to be. But people are not going to be, you know, going back to work in the oil business unless something gives.
Yeah.
And of course, like they said, you know, the storage deals are full.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to, it looks to me like, do something about the oil out there. I don't know what. I would say they need another business, a big, something big out there other than just oil, instead of just depending just on that. We need something else really, really great out there.
Like a plan B, something else to draw in business.
A big plan B, yes.
I don't know what that would even be. Maybe a bunch of people form a committee and come up with some other, you know, brilliant plan or something. I don't know. There's got to be something.
Well, there has to be something other than every few years everybody goes broke in the oil business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know they can make enough money when it's going good, you know. But you know, when everything goes bad, you can't just lose all that you've already gained.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I know we've talked about this for you know, several times over the last several years. But, you know, when things are going well, we're hoping that people are at least those that are benefiting are putting that away. They're investing. They're you know, getting that money growing instead of just I guess just instead of
blowing
sitting in the bank.
We don't want them to blow it.
Yeah, yeah, going out and blowing it on toys and who knows what. Hopefully they were doing something responsible so that now, in times like these, there is something to fall back on. And that's what this is all about. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Who I assume you haven't been in there in a while.
I have not. I want to go, but I have not.
Yeah.
Now, Claudia is in our Midland office. She's right there. And, you know, she's doing okay. They don't have an alert out in Midland where everybody has to close right now.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, it's just here. And so that's how we're getting through this. Of course, all my crew is working. We're working hard. We closed another $1 million policy yesterday.
Really?
That's about over $3 million for the month so far. We've been able to get everybody in those. We have a lot of bids out. We've got about 13 bids out on some really good short policies I think everybody's going to like. We hope we get the bids. And then we've got that $6 million coming, and Catafumo, I know everybody is wondering when the money's going to hit the bank. it was approved at the carrier last week. That should be first of the week in everybody's bank accounts. This is the one that was from New Jersey, and New Jersey shut everything down, and we had a hard, hard time getting the death certificate.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in right there. When everybody's shut down, yeah. it's not like people are just trying to, you know, be uncooperative. It's just there's nobody home. There's nobody there to do it.
That's right. And they have an online deal, and that takes forever. And we finally got the death certificate from the widow. And we had a hard time getting that. It took her 3 weeks to send it to us.
Wow. That's a long time.
It was a long time. So we've tried to streamline that also where this won't happen again, where that you know we can get our death certificates in and get everybody paid and it not take that long.
Good.
So that's what we're working on now. But we've got a lot of policy, so it's like we've got a lot of opportunity. We did have several people come over this week, put their money with us. They told me how much they'd lost. Some of them had lost, you know, $50,000 to $75,000 already.
Really?
So, and one gentleman said, I've been intending to do this since March. And he waited a little too long, so, you know, he had some pretty big losses. But anyway, he's now out of the stock market. He's got everything, you know, leveled out.
Are people, are they completely bailing on the stock market, or are they still, you know, have a few things in there, but they're really kind of diversifying a little bit more than maybe they used to?
A lot of them are doing 100% bail out of the stock market.
Oh, wow, wow. And yeah. and the reason I ask that is because I wonder if people, like, really all over the place start, you know, completely bailing, what kind of signals is that going to send? And then does that cause even more instability in the stock market? Which
There's about $4 billion that's already come out of the stock market.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, people all over the country have taken a lot of money out.
So I guess then if people are thinking, well, you know, should I go ahead and start making other plans or should I stick with it? That might be another indicator of some potential, I guess, rough waters on Wall Street, that if maybe you are thinking about it, you know, that might be one of those things that makes it even worse. I guess historically speaking, the signs are there, right?
Yes, and I think it's going to be rough sledding for the stock market for a long time. You know, ups and downs, I think, are going to be severe.
Yeah. The highs will be higher, the lows will be lower.
Yeah, it's really bad. And I think, you know, people need to get their head in the right place and say, you know, how much of my money can I really afford to lose? And if I can't afford to lose it all, put some of it where it'll be safe, where it's going to be in level, where it can't go down. That's, you know, if you never made a dime, if your money was safe, it would be a blessing right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you knew that your money could not go down, if you knew you couldn't lose any, I think that would really be important, rather than saying, you know, I hope it doesn't go down anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to be there right now. And I know people... You know, you talk about ulcers. They all got ulcers over this.
Oh, I'm sure. My goodness.
You know, especially people that have big portfolios. You know, Branson, I think, lost $1 billion the other day.
Really?
You know?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Well, you know, his big airline, you know, is at a standstill. He was hoping he was going to get some of this money from one of the countries, you know, for his.
He's
had to put up that island he's got. You know, he's got this huge island.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting that up as collateral.
Really?
For his airline, yeah.
I didn't know that. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess Virgin Airlines is probably in a lot of trouble. And they just, I think, within the last, I don't know, several months, a year, two maybe, you know, they had that cruise line. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember what it's called, but they had
that's
that
right.
cruise line.
That's right. He started that also.
Yeah, and now that's got to be in trouble too, because people aren't. They can't go anywhere. They can't do anything. They can't travel. You certainly can't get on a cruise ship now.
So. I would, of course, I don't ever say never, but I would never get on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you something.
Yeah.
Because you saw how long at sea those people were. Nobody wanted them. Nobody wanted to come back and dock anywhere.
No, there was no place to land and call home, and they were kind of stuck on the boat. And that's a bad place to be in, not only physically, you know, when you're on a cruise ship and you're out there having fun and doing all the things that you can do on a cruise ship, I guess, it's one thing. But when you're when you're there and it's not by choice, I would imagine it probably becomes a prison. All those things, all the activities that they had are no longer there, and now you're stuck in a little cabin. That's a bad spot to be in.
Yeah, and they talked to some of those people, and they said, can you imagine being in that little small room for 30 days?
Yeah.
And they were going to go on a 10-day trip.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Gilligan's Island, but much, much different.
Yeah, much different than that.
Yeah.
You know, if they were in Polynesia and laying on the beach and eating coconuts, that'd be one thing.
Oh, that sounds nice.
But to be stuck in those rooms, it wasn't funny.
No, that's not funny at all. So when we're looking at these different industries, it's hard to find any kind of industry that's not affected by what's going on right now. And so I think really anybody in any situation, and this is, I guess, a unique place for everybody to be in right now as far as money goes and wealth building and wealth management and things like that, I would imagine this is probably one of the first times that most everybody is in the same place. They're kind of going at it from the same point of view. You know, it's like whether you know, you're an oil tycoon, or, you know, if you're, you know, just a regular worker like the rest of us, doing, you know, something where you're making an average wage and you're making an honest living. Everybody is looking at their wealth management, and they're saying, my goodness, how much more can we afford to lose, because every business is affected by this.
That's exactly right. And that's when they should be calling us and saying, you know, I don't want to lose any more money.
Yeah.
I'd like to have my money where I know that I will always have my principal. My principal is safe. I know that I'll always get that principal back. Plus, you know, the contract calls for interest, and you're going to get your interest.
Mm-hmm. So for people who are in the stock market, people who are, you know, living their everyday lives, even if somebody hasn't ever really thought about investing, because I know there's a number of people who, you know, have probably been just going about their everyday lives and haven't really thought about retirement, haven't really thought about investing, haven't really thought about wealth management or wealth growth or anything like that. When somebody is in the situation like we are in now, this might be a time for literally anybody in just about any field to start thinking about it, even if they're not in the stock market, even if they haven't lost, you know, like you say, $50,000 to $75,000. This would be a good time to take this, I guess, odd period that we're in, and maybe start, which may go against what people normally think. It's like, my goodness, things are so unstable. This is the wrong time to invest. But we're talking about investing in a life insurance policy, which is very, very different than Wall Street. So what makes this such a profitable investment now?
Well, it's the most stable thing right now that we have. I think if anybody that has any type of investment with risk, this has got the lowest risk of anything I know, because this is a life insurance policy. We are buying life insurance policies on people that have terminal cancer. They have to have stage 4 cancer. When we buy these policies, we give them their money up front, whatever it is. If it's a $1 million policy, they may get $700,000 or such. And then our people make the difference between what we paid for that policy and what the face amount is. So, you know, it works. Right now we have $6 million coming in maturities to our clients. That's a lot of money.
That is.
And this, you know, it goes that way all the way. And when we buy a policy, we look at it to see how sick they are, what the doctors say, how many months it is. Do they have 24 months, 18 months to live, or 30, whatever. So we want to know what kind of cancer it is, how many doctors they've seen, what they're on, how much pain medication. If they're obese, that's really important. So all of this has to do with us buying the policy. And when we buy those policies, then everything goes to the bank, and the bank handles it for us. The bank is the trustee on every account. And that's what makes it a safe investment, is the bank handles it all. Your money goes direct to the bank. It doesn't go to our company. It goes right to Nevada Trust, and that's where the account is set up. The bank pays the premium as it comes due. We have all the premium escrowed. And then when the people pass away, again, the bank steps in, gets the certified death certificate for us, and sends it to the insurance company, and then they pay. And they pay to the bank. Then the bank puts it in everybody's account. So that's I love the way the investment works. You know, I mean, there's every safeguard that there can possibly be.
And people also don't have to worry about getting up in the middle of the night, checking their portfolio, seeing if they have anything, because a life insurance policy holds its value. Talk for just a second, because that is such a big deal, especially right now with so many investments losing value. A life insurance policy doesn't. It holds it. How is that possible?
Well, when you buy a policy, a life insurance never goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you buy a life insurance policy, they say, okay, we're going to issue you a policy for $1 million. They're not going to come back later and say, oh, by the way, we don't want to pay that. That's what the contract calls for. Insurance companies are going to pay the face amount of that contract every time.
So regardless.
So if it's $1 million, they're going to give $1 million.
Doesn't matter what happens on Wall Street, doesn't matter what happens with oil, a life insurance policy really is its own entity. It's not affected by literally anything on earth at all, like nothing.
Well, and we've proven it. Here, everything has fallen. Prices of everything's went to nothing, but these insurance policies have not lost one dime.
See, that's amazing.
Their value did not go down. Do you realize that? Our portfolios are just like they were 60 days or 90 days ago. It's worth the same amount as it ever was.
It's like most people when they go to work, or if they still can go to work, or they talk to family members or friends or anybody that turns on the news, we're all seeing how people are you know, they're losing jobs, they're losing money, businesses are closing, opportunities are you know, falling to the wayside. And what's so odd, and it's really one of those things that really kind of separates a quote unquote normal type of investment with the life insurance policies, while all these other people are losing opportunities, the people who you have investing in these life insurance policies, they're thriving. They're making money hand over fist with these.
Did you know there is some people that came to us in December? So they're brand new, just gotten policies. They've already had a maturity.
Really? They just came to you in December and they've already got maturities?
They came in December and we've had a policy mature. We were in shock.
I bet they're thrilled. That's a nice way
to
start.
Yes, they are. They're happy.
Wow. Wow. So
that doesn't happen very often, but it did. And, you know, you don't have to explain anything to people once they've had that maturity. They say, yes, that's the way it works. All right.
I'm in. I'm in forever now. I'm in here for the long
haul.
That's
right. I'm in. And a customer reminded me this week that they have been with me since 2013.
That's 7 years.
They've been with us 7 years.
That's got to, and obviously I have no idea how many policies they're in or what anything about their situation, but I would imagine after 7 years being in several policies, I would imagine they've made a really, really great chunk of money.
And I haven't added up. I probably need to send them a deal and show them, you know, exactly what they've made. I don't even remember the last time they asked for one,
yeah.
but you know, I had forgot that a lot of people have been with us that long.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And so when you have a situation like this where people have been with you for a long time, is there room, and I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but is there room for new people to come in and start investing? Is there opportunity for new investors?
Sure, there's always room for new investors. Sometimes, you know, you think, well, should we take on any more people? But we do. And we take on people that, you know, come to us and say, okay, you know, I've got this much money. I want to invest it. As long as they're not looking for a get-rich-quick scheme, you know, it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they know that, you know, every year or every 2 years, their policies mature and we just keep rolling it over for their retirement. Let's say they've already retired. It works if you're already retired or if you're going to retire this year or next year or whenever.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, and the fact that this is not, you know, one and done type of type of an investment. This is a plan. This is a strategy that people should plan to be in over a number of years. It's designed to grow their wealth over time, not only necessarily to get ready for retirement, but after they retire, they can keep going. They won't miss a beat. They still have, you know, everything kind of goes on as normal. They still have plenty of money to live and, or at some point when we can, travel or, you know, buy a lake house or do whatever they want to do and still have money to invest in more policies. And that kind of keeps the whole thing going. So how long is this journey usually take most people to, how long should people plan on doing this to get ready for retirement?
Well, a lot of people, when they come to us, they say, you know, I want to do this till I retire. And then a lot of people say, I want to do this past retirement. I want you to handle my money, you know, as long as possible. So a lot of people, once they're getting ready to retire, they bring their money over. We start investing it. And then we keep money in their account where they'll always have cash. And you can do this forever. We have a lot of retired people. And that's the way it works. They just say, okay, I need $100,000 out of my account or $50,000, and we keep that money in their account where they'll always have cash.
Is this the kind of thing where at some point, if people are in enough policies and maybe the situation lends itself to it, is this the kind of thing where somebody could come in, start investing, grow their wealth, and live off just the interest and still invest and still make money?
Yes, we have a lot of people that are living off their interest.
Really?
And they're doing great, yes.
And so that, I guess that leads to a whole nother situation of, you know, people, once they get started, once they get going, they're at a place where they can actually live off of the investment itself, not have to worry about, you know, the situation of maybe a job. You know, because I know there's a lot of oil companies, especially that they've made some deep, deep cuts and they're going, you know, they're cutting on levels that a lot of people were never planning on ever happening. You know, and so and it's not just oil. It's all kinds of industries. It's you know, the education system. It's, you know, everything that's affected construction. I mean, all these different areas are looking at cutbacks. And so if somebody was in a situation, maybe started several years ago, they could actually walk away or be told to walk away from their job, still live off of this, still grow their wealth. And see, that's one of those things that it seems so backwards from what we hear every place else, but that is really how this investment is designed to work. You get in several policies, you invest over time, and it puts people on a trajectory to have a whole new life, right? Am I saying
I think it does, yes. And like people now, the companies that are laying them off, they've got that big 401k, you know, they can bring it over, start investing. If they want to go back to work, they can do it. If they don't, you know, we can fix it, you know, where they have income every year. So it's up to them. They can put the money with us and start growing it very conservatively and then go ahead and take another job, or they don't have to take another job. You know, it depends how much money they've got, you know, that they've accumulated. If they've accumulated $300,000 or $400,000, you know, it's a good time to bring that money over and get it started working.
How long should somebody actually plan on doing something like this before? And I know every situation is different, and so it's on a case-by-case basis. But on average, for somebody who's just kind of starting, coming in and saying, Faye, just give me some kind of a ballpark figure about how many policies, how long I should do this before I'm at a comfortable place, which is different for everybody.
Well, we know they're going to have to do it 7 or 8 years, and then if they're ready to retire at that time, then all they have to do is say, okay, I need this much money every year out of my account.
Because I'm sure a
lot of people just let it ride. We've got lots of people that just let it ride. They never take anything out. They've got enough money. They're just accumulating right now. And we don't ever talk about that. The ones that are just going to accumulate it and not spend it. We have a lot of people. You know, we have, you know, probably 650 to 700 clients, and a lot of them just accumulate the wealth, and they're saving it back, and they're not spending it, and they're not even calling for that cash. They're just letting it accumulate.
So they're just using their money to grow more money, to grow more money exponentially.
That's exactly right. That's what they're doing.
Wow. Now, I'm sitting here running through some numbers in my brain, and I'm thinking, my God, that can add up very, very quickly.
That's right. Imagine. If you're not taking anything out, you can imagine, and especially if they haven't had to start taking, if it's a 401k or an IRA with us, if they haven't had to start taking any money out yet. So it'll grow a lot faster when you're not paying the government, right?
That's always helpful.
I mean, you know, you don't have to take anything out till you're 70 and a half. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them right now are not taking anything out, you know. So if you're not having to take anything out, you're in great shape.
So it's pretty much just all profit on top of profit at this point for some.
That's right. It's profit on top of profit till the government says, wait a minute, you've got to start paying.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's at what'd you say, 70 and a half?
70 and a half, you've got to start paying. It's about 3.68.
All right, so the cornerstone of how this works is the types of policies that you not only bid on, but that you buy. And so we'll get into why the specific types of policies are so important, which is what makes this whole thing so profitable for so many people. We'll do that here in a minute. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
We should also mention your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and people can go there, find information. They can find out money that past investors have made. They can read testimonials, kind of find out a little bit more about how the investment works there. Again, it's AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what are we talking about this morning?
Larry McMurtry. One of the greatest writers in Texas ever had.
Really?
Yes, he was born in Archer City. His parents were ranchers, born in 1932. Lived outside of Archer City as a young boy, learned all about ranching and ranch life. And then in the 1940s, when the war came along, his uncle came by. His uncle said, I'm on my way during World War II. And he came to the ranch house and gave him a box with all these books in it. The books were all, you know, from the 30s. And he read these books until they fell apart. And that's what got him interested in writing books.
Really?
And oh, my gosh, yes. And, of course, you know, he's one of the most brilliant writers. Do you remember what all he's written?
No, of course not.
Lonesome Dove is one of his biggest deals he wrote, and they made a movie of it. Do you remember Lonesome Dove, the huge miniseries that everybody tuned in there for so long?
I do.
It was the longest miniseries in the world.
I remember
that.
Well,
that was his.
Wow.
Okay.
Neat.
The movie HUD with Paul Newman. He wrote the book, and then they made the movie HUD from his book. Terms of Endearment. Remember that movie?
I do.
That was off of his book.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, this guy is so famous, it's ridiculous. The Last Picture Show, this is when he really became popular, 1971. Everybody went to see it. It was black and white. I never will forget it. And it was great. And then Loving Molly, that movie was from his book, Leaving Cheyenne.
Hmm.
Then the film Texasville. Falling from Grace, The Evening Star, then Brokeback Mountain. You remember that one?
I do.
That was very controversial.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
I'm being nice.
I know you are.
he wrote In a Narrow Grave, It's Always We Rambled, Crazy Horse. Walter Benjamin at the Dairy Queen. This is a book on being 60 and beyond. Satchavilla. Essays on the American West, and they tell that he wrote more about women than anybody. They said he knew women, he knew the Old West. Everybody just says he's one of the most prolific writers to write about women.
Really?
And he wrote so many. Oh, yeah. Moving on, All my friends are going to be strangers.
I had no idea he had such a footprint in.
Oh my gosh! Somebody's Darling, Some Can Whistle, The Evening Star. That's some of the greatest books. Then the others, The Murder of Mary Fagan. They made a TV movie out of that.
Wow!
That was the Johnson County War series. Remember those?
I do. Yes.
Okay, that was his. Falling from Grace. And that starred John Mellencamp. Memphis, the movie Memphis. And one of the funniest stories about him is he was recovering from heart surgery. And he was a little bit depressed. And that's when he wrote The Streets of Laredo.
Really?
Because he was a little bit depressed.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. And people don't realize how educated he was, you know. He went to Rice. He went to the University of Texas. And then, he went to Stanford and studied. And then he became a rare book scout. And so in Houston, he had a bookstore there called The Bookman. And then he moved to Washington and opened another with two partners there in Georgetown. And then he came out to Archer City, where he was born, and opened up a bookstore there. And it was the largest used bookstore in the United States. It carried 450,000 books.
Oh, my Lord, that's a lot of books.
Yeah. And they said he was just, from the time he started, he was so good. From the first novel up, and he said what he would do, he'd get up in the morning, he'd say, okay, today I've got to do 5 pages. He did 5 pages, rain, shine, holiday, weekends, didn't matter. And then finally he said, you know, I've got to do 10 pages a day.
He needed to kick it up a notch or two.
He had to kick it up a notch. He was a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books. He was just, you know, he won so many awards. For The Last Picture Show, of course, The Iron Orchard, Lonesome Dove. He got the Amon G. Carter Award in 1966. And the movie, the other one, Good Times Gone or Here Again. And he received every award there is. He was invited to the Academy Award for his films. And when he went, he wore his Levi's, his boots, and then he put a tuxedo jacket with it. With his boots and Levi's.
Neat. It's cool that he held true to his own self.
I said that was about him. You know, he didn't care. And then, you know, in 12, he decided to sell one of his bookstores and all the books and downsize because he didn't want his heirs to have to deal with this. So they had the auction and auctioned off all these thousands of books. And he said, I've never seen this many people lined up in Archer City, and I'm sure I never will again.
Now, a truer statement was probably never said.
That's right. And, of course, you know, he got Best Picture Awards for Terms of Endearment. And of course, you know, Tommy Lee Jones starred in Lonesome Dove. And you know, people turned in every night to watch that.
Yeah.
I can remember when it was on. And it was a fabulous, fabulous series. But it's just amazing, you know, what he did. And Comanche Moon, I don't know if you remember that one. And Dead Man's Walk.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that one.
Yeah. And then he had a series. One was called Sin Killer, The Wandering Hill, By Sorrow's River, Folly and Glory. You know, he wrote about Annie Oakley. He just knew Texas, and he knew the panhandle, and all these things that he wrote about were things he really knew about. You know, he knew the history of Texas, and he went back and in his mind and wrote it like he saw it.
You know, and I think what happens when a writer, you know, writes some of the great works that they do, they write it from a place that, you know, and I think they say these things sometimes, but they write what they know about. They're not trying to create a made-up scenario. And there's nothing wrong with that for those who do, but those who are true to what they know, like this, you know, they often go into it with not really huge goals of, you know, changing the face of the earth. They just write what they know, and it latches on because it's so relatable to readers.
Yeah, and his was. And that town that he put in most of his books was called Thalia. And, you know, it appeared in a lot of them. In this town, Thalia, I think it was really Archer City. And, you know, he just changed it, you know, to make it more interesting. But I think it was. The way he wrote, and what I was thinking about when I was talking about him this morning was all these people that are home right now, and they can do e-books and get his books and read them and be a good time to read up on things that, you know, the good Westerns that we have available. And, of course, there aren't any of his that I don't like.
Yeah. I imagine you probably got them all, don't you?
Yeah. And the Lonesome Dove series, my gosh, you can go back and read that anytime. And The Streets of Laredo and Crazy Horse, that's my favorite.
Yeah, and that is a great idea, too, to get caught up on some of these things. Even if, you know, somebody's read them before, it's a good time to go back and reread them. I mean, they're classics. I mean, it's one of those things that probably people read or saw and just kind of put on the back shelf, hadn't probably thought about it since. This is a good time to catch up.
Yeah, and how many people, you know, he was an instructor at Texas Christian University. You know, he went back to Rice University, served as a lecturer there. He did a lot of funny things. Him and his group, you know, they were called the Merry Pranksters. Mm-hmm. And they glow painted a school bus and rode around in it. I mean, they did a lot of crazy things, I'll tell you.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people remember how funny a guy he really was, that he was out for a good time. You wouldn't think so, but he was.
Wow.
He was just that kind of guy. But they said he... all of his stories are so good. There's not a one I don't think that I wouldn't go back and read again.
Yeah, it seems like they're all so different, but they're all so the same at the same time. It's not like he just recreated the same story, but they all seem to have that same, I guess, authenticity that runs through all of them. And so you don't always get that with a lot of writers. That might be one of the things that makes him special.
I think so, because he wrote about a state he knew about. You know, he didn't write some faraway story about somebody he'd never heard of.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that helps bring the visualization really to the forefront. When the writer can actually see it, they've lived it, they can describe. It's like you could write a book, you could write an essay or even an article about, say, you know, New York City. But if you've never actually been there before, you know, you can't really describe, you know, the architecture of the buildings. You can't really describe, you know, the emotions, the energy, how it actually feels, the atmosphere, I guess. You can't really capture those things when you're writing unless you've actually lived them. And that's what he did. He brought all those senses and emotions to life, and you can't always do that.
That's right. And he could, and he did. And then he was playful in some of them, you know, like the Dairy Queen story. You know? For all those people he said over 60. Oh, my gosh. He knew the Dairy Queen in Texas. I mean, he knew it, you know? He wrote about stories that he really knew about. That's what I love.
Yeah, you can't just make... you can't make that up.
You can't make it up. And when he wrote about women, he obviously knew women. Nobody ever talked about it, but everybody says his description and portrayal of women was so true to life, you know?
Yeah.
And they love that part about it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's got to be what makes him such a special writer, is that he does write about what he knows about. And the thing is, so many other people know about it as well. So they all say, like songwriters, when they write about, you know, certain topics, not everybody can relate to it, but those that are really good with writing songs about, like, love and topics that people have lived, that's what makes those works special. And it sounds like he's the equivalent of that as far as storytelling.
Well, and the other thing is, he came back to Texas. This, you know, most of these old guys, they go to Hollywood, they're gone.
Yeah.
They never come back. They write from Hollywood. He wrote from Texas all these years,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and
he's been everywhere, but he came back to Archer City, you know, his old hometown. How many people do that?
Not many. And that's really staying connected to not only your roots, because that's very cliche-ish, but it really does keep the writer connected to the very emotions and the very things that have made his works so authentic, is when you stay in touch with those things.
Yeah, and coming back to his home state and writing his books and... you know, from Houston to Archer City. I mean, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And Lonesome Doves, you know, is the one, you know, he got a Pulitzer Prize for it. I mean, it's one of the biggest series. I don't know of any other writer that's had that kind of a movie like Lonesome Dove series, because it was a big, long series.
Yeah. Yeah, it translated very well.
And look how many actors played in that. Do you realize that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can just name them. There was, you know, a cast of hundreds.
Yeah, yeah. It really kind of propelled a lot of actors to a whole new career.
Yeah, and Robert Duvall started. He was a big player in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, Tommy Lee Jones and a lot of others that, like you say, I think it really did a lot for their careers.
Yeah, yeah, it did.
But I was just thinking about him, and I said, you know, people, while they're at home, they could do some e-books and read some of these great, great novels of his. And I think they would really enjoy them, because I loved every one of them.
Yeah.
There's not any that I don't like.
Good chance to get caught up on these things, or if it's been a while, go back and reread them, things like that. We're in a great time to reconnect with things. Larry McMurtry, right?
That's right. Larry McMurtry, famous boy.
Fantastic. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
And we're all looking for ways like Larry to make money. He made a ton of money off of his works. We're not all authors. We're not all writers. We're not all, you know, we all have our own thing. The one thing, though, that we can all do is invest. And so when we're investing in a life insurance policy, we're talking about how it's very different from Wall Street. You know, it does the value holds regardless of what's happening anywhere around the world. The thing, though, that makes a life settlement such a profitable investment is the types of insurance policies that you're buying. You're not buying these things that we see on TV, especially these days where, you know, they're trying to go after these, you know, happy people that are going to go driving the RV all over the country and, you know, just live it up and kick their heels up in the air. No, you're looking for policies of people who have stage four cancer who need to sell their policy. So how does it turn where you end up with these policies? How do you get them?
Well, we go and we bid on them. You have to bid on them. You can't just, buy them direct. On most of them now, in Texas, we can buy them direct, yes. But everywhere else these come from, we go and we bid on them just like everybody else. It's kind of like an auction. And you go and you bid and you say, okay, this is what I'll give for that policy. And then in 2 weeks, they let you know if you got the bid or not. So we bid them every day. We're bidding policies. Right now, we've got bids out on 13 policies, and they're all great policies. Some of them are 18 months, 14 months, 24 months. They're all really short. So they're great policies. We bid them. We don't know whether we'll get the bid. Now, then let's go a step farther. Once we get the bid, what happens? Well, then once we get it, we notify our clients and say, okay, we've got this $1 million policy. We'd like for you to go in it. We think we'll suggest this much to put in it. Then we give them all the information. They can look at it. They can look at the health and see if they agree with us. And then we put them in the policy. Then we just wait for it to mature. It's pretty simple after that. You know, we just wait for it to mature. and when it matures, then they get paid every time.
And this is the big home run here is that we're looking at policies that, you know, when we go back and look at historicals, people know the statistics on people diagnosed with stage four cancer. It's not like most of these policies are going to go on 15, 20, 30 years. So people aren't waiting, half of their life for the policy to mature, for their profit to come in. And so I would assume that short turnarounds, short profit time span, how do you say that? Short
LAs, short life expectancies.
Okay. The shortness of how they make money and then the amount of money, I would assume, are two of the biggest draws. Is that what
everybody loves how much they're making. We're paying 1% a month. If it's 24 months, they're going to get 24%. If it's 12 months, they'll get 12%. So that's exactly how it works. So when they invest, if it comes in early, they're still going to get the same amount. If it comes in on time, it's still the same amount, 1% a month. If it's late, it's still going to be that, minus if you had some premium to pay. Most of the premium is very, very reasonable. Every once in a while, there'll be one that's a little high. But most of the time, it's right on keel. You know, it's always less than 3%, and sometimes it's 0.12. You know, it's really small lots of times.
And that's the biggest risk right there is if it does go over and they have to pay premiums. But it doesn't take away all their profit either. So people shouldn't look at it as though, oh, my gosh, if I have to pay a premium, they're going to be sky high and I'm going to lose all my profit. I may get, you know, $50. That's not the case at all.
No. And it works out where that you may not make quite as much, but you're still going to make a great return. And it's every time. We do a policy, we turn around and do another one when they mature, and just keep going. That's the way it works.
Okay, so that's the biggest risk. But there's two other big risks that people need to know about going into this. So what?
Okay, the other risk is it's not liquid during that time. So if you've got a policy, and you put your money in it, it's not liquid till it matures. When it matures, you get your money. So that money, everybody knows that. That when you put your cash in, you're going to get cash back out when it matures. That's the way it works. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. And as you know, in Texas, we've never had one go under. In fact, nationally, we haven't had any go under because somebody always buys them.
That premium income, you've always talked about how huge that is and how that alone keeps these insurance companies so profitable.
That's right, because their premium income is what everybody in the world would like to have. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a lot of people wish they owned a life insurance company, probably, because the premium income is so good. They're going, man, if I go on that.
Especially, I'm guessing, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but I would imagine probably in these times, there are a number of people who are having to cut back on expenses and maybe canceling their policy, and all that means is that that's just extra money that life insurance companies are putting in the bank. They're never going to have to pay it out. It is strict profit, right?
That's right, because there's a lot of people that cancel their policy every year and just let it drop. Mm. And when they do, the insurance company marks it up, chalk and mark.
Yep.
And they go, there's a claim we don't have to pay. So there's a lot of claims they never pay because people drop their life insurance all the time. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Yeah. Even in normal times, people drop their policies for a number of reasons. And all that is just more money in the bank for life insurance companies, more money in the bank for people to be making. And you said there's a lot of policies that you're bidding on right now and a lot of opportunities for people to get invested.
We've got about, I think we've got 10 or 13 we're bidding on right now. So now's a good time to invest. Now's a good time to be making money while everybody else is losing money. So our people are making money. We're not losing any money. You know, it's all invested at the life insurance companies. And so we know how many billions of dollars they have. We know our policies are good. And remember, we always do A-rated companies. There's been great opportunities with B-rated companies, and we've never done it so far.
Cool.
So we want to stay with the biggest and the best, where we know that they always have billions of dollars to pay out to us.
Are you taking appointments these days with things the way they are? Do you have availability for people?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm doing video conferencing with them, and then they can go over to the office and finish everything up with Claudia.
Cool. All right. So
that's why we're doing, we're just doing video conferencing for the next 2 weeks, and then they can just go over to the office, and she'll help you with the paperwork, and then get me on the phone at the same time.
Lot of opportunity to make money, lot of opportunity to come talk to you. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call and get the ball rolling?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.